and welcome to this podcast focusing on TROP2 targeting antibody drug conjugates for triple-negative breast cancer. In this episode, which covers the content from a recent online Burst CME program, Drs. Philippa Lintz and Rita Nanda discuss recent clinical trial and real-world data for antibody drug conjugates used to treat triple-negative breast cancer. This activity is provided by PER and supported by an educational grant from Gilead Sciences, Inc.
Hi, welcome to the Burst CME program, Dissecting Clinical Trial and Real-World Data for ADCs in triple-negative breast cancer. On behalf of Physicians Education Resource, thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Rita Nanda, an Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Chicago, and I'd like to welcome Philippa Lintz, who is an Assistant Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and a Senior Physician at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Thank you so much for joining us. During this program, we will discuss current and emerging therapeutic strategies for the management of triple-negative breast cancer, and we will focus our discussion on the use of ADCs in triple-negative breast cancer. We'll begin with an overview of the current standard of care for metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, highlighting some recent data, as well as AE management strategies for optimal treatment selection and sequencing to optimize delivery of patient care as the treatment landscape continues to evolve. We'll end with a case-based discussion with Dr. Lintz and myself to help put this data into clinical context and provide insights into integrating these strategies into your clinical practice. I'd like to highlight some key data to anchor our discussion. First, we'll start with how do we apply clinical and real-world data? As you all know, the ASCENT randomized phase 3 trial, which compared sacituzumab govitecan, a TROP2 targeting ADC, to chemotherapy of physician's choice, significantly improved progression-free survival and overall survival with SG versus chemotherapy of physician's choice. There was an almost 4-month improvement in median progression-free survival, and that resulted in a more than 5-month improvement in overall survival. And this was very exciting data a number of years ago and has led to a practice change. We've also looked at retrospectively HER2-low and ultra-low disease in patients who participated in ASCENT. And regardless of HER2-low or HER2-null status, patients did equally as well with SG as compared to chemotherapy of physician's choice. So there is really no role in HER2-low expression and how it correlates with response to SG versus chemotherapy. So we also know from ASCENT and other studies that TROP2 expression levels don't correlate with a benefit to SG over chemotherapy of physician's choice. So all patients with hormone receptor negative disease are candidates for SG. There have been a number of real-world studies that have looked at SG versus standard of care options in patients with advanced triple-negative breast cancer. There's been a multi-institutional cohort, a UK real-world study, as well as a large database analysis of US patients. All of these studies had findings that were pretty similar to what we saw with ASCENT, where median progression-free survivals were in the 5-month range and overall survivals in the 10 to 13 month range. So really reflecting what we saw in the ASCENT clinical trial. There are other TROP2 targeting ADCs that are in clinical development. Datopotamab deruxtecan, or Dato-DXd for short, is another TROP2 targeting ADC, again with a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload like SG, although it is a distinct payload from what we've used in SG, with a lot of similar efficacy that's been seen. Dato-DXd has been studied in the context of a pan-tumor study, and you have a small study of patients with triple-negative breast cancer, response rates in the 40% range with median overall survivals in that 13-month range. Again, this was a small single-arm study, but you can see that the data here is relatively consistent with what we saw in ASCENT with SG. Datopotamab deruxtecan has also been combined with immunotherapy, with durvalumab in patients with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, with again remarkable efficacy seen in the frontline metastatic setting, with response rates on the 80% range, with quite durable responses. Now, this was a single-arm study of the combination. Randomized phase three trials are ongoing now, and hopefully we will have some data in the future. A third TROP2 targeting ADC, sacituzumab turemtecan, or sac-TMT, has also been investigated and is currently approved for use in China based on the OptiTROP-Breast01 study. This was a large randomized phase three trial which compared sac-TMT to chemotherapy of physician's choice, much like ASCENT, with very similar eligibility criteria in looking at patients in the metastatic setting, patients who'd received two lines of therapy, at least one for metastatic disease. And you can see here significant improvements in median progression-free survival and overall survival were seen in this study that was conducted in China. And this drug is currently available for use in China and is also ongoing in clinical trials in Europe and the United States as well. Side effects that were seen in the context of this study primarily were tolerable. Neutropenia was a common side effect that was seen, along with other cytopenias like thrombocytopenia and anemia, as well as stomatitis. So a little bit distinct from what was seen in with SG, but stomatitis has also been seen with Dato-DXd. So I think a side effect that is a little bit distinct from what we've seen with SG. Now, I'd like to bring to your attention the recent results of ASCENT-04 that we saw at ASCO this year. This was a randomized phase three trial which looked at SG plus pembro versus chemotherapy of physician's choice plus pembro in patients with PD-L1 positive advanced triple negative breast cancer. And in this study, we saw a significant improvement in median progression-free survival, favoring SG over chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab. And so the overall survival data were not quite yet mature. We're already starting to see a separation of the curves on the Kaplan-Meier plot. And so we will continue to follow these patients as they go on and continue to receive therapy. In terms of side effects, again, what we would expect with SG, neutropenia, diarrhea, and then immune-related toxicities like we've seen with pembrolizumab. So expected toxicities here and generally quite manageable. I'd like to point out that datopotamab deruxtecan and sac-TMT are also both being investigated with immunotherapy in the advanced cancer setting, as well as in the early stage settings as well, in the neoadjuvant and post-neoadjuvant residual disease setting. So really exciting times ahead for us. I'd like to spend the last minute or so talking about trastuzumab deruxtecan, which is another ADC which targets HER2 and is available for use in HER2 low and HER2 ultra low hormone receptor negative disease, as well as in hormone receptor positive disease. And if you'll recall, about a third of patients with hormone receptor negative disease will have HER2 low or ultra low disease and will therefore be candidates for T-DXd as well. T-DXd was investigated in the context of the DESTINY-Breast04 trial in patients who'd received 1 to 2 prior lines of chemotherapy for metastatic disease, and T-DXd was compared to chemotherapy of physician's choice. 90% of the patients who participated in this trial had hormone receptor positive disease, but about 60 patients, or 10%, did have hormone receptor negative disease. And what we found in the context of this trial was a significant overall survival in median PFS, as well as OS in the overall hormone receptor positive population. And we saw very similar improvements, although not assessable for statistical significance in an exploratory cohort for those patients with hormone receptor negative disease. So when the approval for T-DXd came for HER2-low disease, it encompassed hormone receptor negative disease as well. And based on the DESTINY-Breast06 trial, which demonstrated in at least hormone receptor positive disease a benefit in HER2 ultra-low disease, that approval for hormone receptor negative disease was expanded to include HER2 ultra-low disease as well. For the most part, T-DXd is well tolerated, although it does have an adverse event of special interest, interstitial lung disease, which occurred in about 12% of patients who participated in DESTINY-Breast04. And unfortunately, a handful of cases were fatal cases of interstitial lung disease. So it's very important to be very vigilant of this and monitor patients for any symptoms, pulmonary symptoms, and order appropriate imaging and hold therapy if patients develop any interstitial lung disease. So just to summarize how we take care of patients with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, it's very critical in the advanced cancer setting to determine PD-L1 status for patients who have PD-L1 positive disease. That frontline approach is, at this point, pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy of physician's choice. For patients who have PD-L1 negative disease, again, thinking about whether or not they have a germline BRCA alteration or not, and if they might be a candidate for a PARP inhibitor in that frontline setting or platinum-based therapy. And if not, if patients are PD-L1 negative and germline BRCA negative, then generally chemotherapy. In the second line setting, based on the ASCENT trial, I would say most of us use SG. And then for patients who have HER2 low or HER2 ultra low disease, T-DXd can be considered at some point down the road, whether it's given sequentially or with an interruption or an intervening of a traditional chemotherapy, I think remains to be seen. I would like to point out, based on the ASCENT trial, I do suspect that the frontline strategy for PD-L1 positive triple negative breast cancer is likely going to change and be SG plus pembrolizumab. I think we're still waiting for FDA approval of this, but as both agents are commercially available, certainly could be considered on a case-by-case basis. So just to summarize what we've spoken about here, we have SG and sac-TMT, which both have been shown in the context of large randomized phase III trials to be better than traditional chemotherapy. All three TROP2 targeting ADCs, so SG, sac-TMT, as well as Dato-DXd, are being investigated in the frontline metastatic triple-negative breast cancer setting, either with or without immunotherapy. We've already seen the results of ASCENT-04. We know ASCENT-03, which is looking at frontline PD-L1 negative disease of SG versus chemotherapy, is also a positive trial, and we should be seeing those results sometime later this year. We know that T-DXd is indicated for HER2-low and ultra-low hormone receptor negative breast cancer. And I think a lot of key questions which remain to be addressed is how can these agents be best sequenced, or can they be sequenced? So now I'd like to move on to a case and ask Dr. Lintz to chime in. We have a 52-year-old woman who was diagnosed with BRCA wild type PD-L1 negative hormone receptor negative breast cancer. She has HER2 low disease, IHC of 1 plus, and she receives paclitaxel in the frontline setting and progresses. So, Dr. Lintz, what would you recommend for this patient in the next line of therapy?
Thank you, Dr. Nanda. And these are the patients that we see in clinic, and we are, you know, and we have to make these decisions. So, you know, looking at your algorithm, and I use a similar algorithm in the clinic, I think that is a patient that is a good candidate for an antibody drug conjugate. I think that the data that we have at the moment favors sacituzumab govitecan over others, although, you know, as she has HER2 low disease, she can be a candidate, for example, right now for T-DXd as well. But given that we have more data of sacituzumab govitecan in triple negative breast cancer, that's what I would favor first. This is a space as well where, as we learn about other trials looking at sacituzumab govitecan in the first line, now in PD-L1 negative, where we might see sacituzumab govitecan moving up and be used in the first line, as we just recently saw the results of ASCENT-04 for those with a PD-L1 positive disease.
Yeah, no, and I think I have a very similar practice style. I have a tendency to start with SG, and then we'll definitely consider T-DXd for this patient down the road. Whether it's the next agent I use or, past that, I think it really depends on the patient. And if I think I'm going to have the opportunity to give another line of therapy, I think, as you know, many of our patients with advanced triple negative breast cancer don't generally get a second or a third line of therapy. So I think it's very important to try to use our best agents up front. So I certainly have given T-DXd immediately after SG, but again, with not the efficacy that I would like to see in this case. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting to think about some of these agents moving up into the post a neoadjuvant therapy setting, or even in patients with previously untreated early stage breast cancer. I think we're seeing all of these agents being investigated in the neoadjuvant setting with immunotherapy. So I think that's really exciting to think about. But then I think the concern is always, well, what are we going to do if they recur after some of these agents? And I suspect you've probably seen that in your practice. Given that you participate in multiple trials in the early stage setting, any thoughts that you have for us in that arena?
That's right. And I think, if we go back to ASCENT-04, we are left with two important questions. One is, what do we do for these patients that most of them, and now that it has been a while since the approval or the adoption of the KEYNOTE-522 regimen in our practice, most of these patients will have received pembrolizumab in the early stage setting. So these patients were allowed it to go on ASCENT-04, but they represented a very small number, and there was a certain disease-free interval that was established. So certainly those beautiful curves do not reflect the majority of patients who already received pembrolizumab. I think that for now, I will still offer them the ASCENT-04 regimen once it is approved. Yes, I think that there is still debate about the benefit of IO after IO. I think the question remains for patients that progressed on SG or that had a short disease-free interval, if they received SG in the neoadjuvant or post-adjuvant or post-surgery setting, so in the post-neoadjuvant setting, which right now is not standard of care. But for example, at our institution, we have the NeoStar, where we use SG in the neoadjuvant space. We have as well the Optimize RD that you have as well at your institution, where some of these patients with residual disease that are those most likely to develop metastatic disease later on, some of them will have received SG. So that leaves us with the question about not only in terms of re-exposure to SG, but even with other TROP2 antibody drug conjugates. I think that for the time being, I'm going to use my DFI, as a reference along with the disease burden. I usually look at the disease-free interval somewhere between 6 to 12 months to decide if I re-expose them, but a lot has to do with the residual side effects and what is the disease burden. Is it very high and I totally need to go for an agent with a different mechanism of action, or can we still try something similar to what the patient received in the early stage setting?
No, I think that's very important. And, all of these TROP2 targeting ADCs we've talked about have very similar payloads, right? They're all topoisomerase 1 payload. So I'm really looking forward to some of the newer therapies that are being investigated that have different payloads, like MMAE, which is a microtubule agent. So I think, there are many, many ADCs that are being investigated, and I think many coming down the line. So with that, Dr. Lentz, I would like to thank you so much for joining me. And this has just been so informative. And I'd like to thank you for your contributions. And I'd like to thank all of you for joining us and hope you found this discussion useful and informative for your clinical practice. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.